Every now and then, the crowd roared. A many-throated beast, always muttering when it wasn't screaming at itself. Far below, the ball players stood out vivid and tiny in their white uniforms against the light-flooded green. It all looked so tidy down there, safe. But she was up here, in the midst of the crowd beast, and she wasn't safe. Lily's heart pounded and pounded. She darted between the tall adult figures, looking for the way back. She'd gotten lost from her mother and sisters when she went looking for grandmother. Mother was going to be so angry. Lily's stomach clenched unhappily. "Don't wander off," she always said. "Don't talk to strangers, don't whine, sit still and be a good girl, and don't wander off." Being a good girl was very, very boring, but maybe better than being lost. The crowd beast roared again, many of its parts leaping to their feet.
No!
Lily tried to get around a really fat man who smelled bad, like bourbon. Lily hated the smell of bourbon. It made her think of when Uncle Chen got mean and started yelling. Mostly he yelled at his sons, not her, but she still didn't like it. Mother hadn't even noticed grandmother was missing. Lily tried to tell her, but she hadn't listened. She never listened. So it was up to Lily to find grandmother, wasn't it? She had to be here somewhere. That's why they came to the stupid ball games, because grandmother liked them. So she was here. Lily just had to find her, and then everything would be okay. Maybe the crowd beast swallowed her. Grandmother wasn't very big. Not as little as Lily, but not big like the other grown-ups either. No, Lily told herself. No, that was stupid. Nothing could eat grandmother. If the crowd beast tried, she'd just tell it to back off, and it would. Grandmother was little, but only in her body. She was big otherwise. So was her secret. They weren't supposed to talk about it. Not ever. Not even to each other. It wasn't the same as Lily's secret, except sort of, because they were both about magic. People don't like magic, so good girls didn't do it. And if they couldn't help doing it, like Lily couldn't help knowing when she touched something that had magic on it, then they weren't supposed to tell anyone.
Now, grown-ups!
Grown-ups were always making stupid rules, especially her mother. Her mother was stuffed with rules, and most of them were dumb. Right now, Lily wished she had a great big magic, one that would make everyone else go away so she could find grandmother. Unease stirred inside her. Something wasn't right. This whole setup wasn't right. Why was she thinking about adults as grown-ups? She was... Suddenly, the crowd beast swelled up tight around her, like she was a splinter and meant to squeeze it out. It was hard to breathe. Lily shoved with arms and body against all those legs and big suffocating bodies. She managed to pop out, a tender little grape squeezed from its skin into a small, clear space. She stood there panting, looking for grandmother or mother, looking for someone, anyone who could...
Do you need help, little girl?
The hand, coming up from behind to rest on Lily's shoulder, made her jump. A voice, for all its friendly words, terrified her. It was high and sweet and cold, so cold.
Are you lost?
The hand tightened, hurting hard. Lily tried to wrench away, but another hand gripped her and slowly turned her around. Lily fought it. She didn't want to see, didn't want... That face. That smiling, pretty woman's face framed by soft blonde hair. And those eyes, empty like a doll's. Lily knew that face.
No! No, you're dead! I know you are! I made you dead!
I'm going to eat you. Then you'll be dead too. We'll be together. Together forever.
The woman bent down, close.
No! Be dead! I want you dead all the way! Dead!
As the woman's hands dug in harder and her face came closer, Lily shut her eyes, wishing for the biggest magic ever. One that would kill the smiling woman forever. And all of a sudden, she was sitting on top of the other woman, who was on her back. She wasn't little anymore. And she was pounding the woman's head against the cold, stony floor, pounding it and pounding it. Blood and gray stuff leaked from the shattered skull she cupped in her two hands, and glistening white bone shards penetrated the hair. And that was wrong. That hadn't happened before. But it was happening now, and the woman wasn't smiling anymore. And her hair? It wasn't blonde like it was supposed to be. It was... Lily stopped, horror welling up in her. The woman's eyes blinked once, and it was her mother looking up at her, and her mother's skull in her hands, her mother's black hair shiny with blood and sticky with brains.
You killed me!
Lily woke, trying to scream.
Shh, there, Lily. There, honey. It's okay. You're okay.
Rule. It was Rule looking down at her, and Rule's hand warm and not hurting on her right shoulder, while her bad shoulder throbbed as if Helen really had dug her fingers into it. She was an adult, not a child, and Helen was dead. Truly and forever dead.
That was a bad one.
Maybe you should talk about it.
She shook her head, unable to put words to the horror. What good would talk do? She just wanted the smothering guilt to go away. It never troubled her in the daylight hours. When she was awake, she knew she'd done what she had to do. So why the nightmares? She burrowed into Rule.
Oh, careful. Your shoulder.
It doesn't matter.
And it didn't, although it was throbbing like a bad tooth. But that meant nothing compared to the hard physical reality of him. He closed himself around her, and his body was warm. Warm enough to melt away fear and horror. She breathed in his scent and felt clean. He was naked. She wasn't, but her legs were bare and tangled with his. His thighs were firm, slightly rough with hair, a roughness she needed, craved. She rubbed her thigh up along his and found his body responding to their closeness, too. Rule stood in Lily's tub beneath the shower jets. Her apartment had its shortcomings, but it did offer two boons: an easy-to-defend bathroom and abundant hot water. This morning, hot water rated almost as high as defensible sleeping quarters. After a night of sentry sleep, he woke early and completely. It seemed best to leave the warmth of Lily's bed before he gave in to his body's urgings and woke her for another loving. She needed sleep, and she needed to sleep here, in her own space. He understood that. She took too many shocks yesterday, including those about him. He grabbed the soap. She'd turned to him, though. In the middle of the night, haunted by a nightmare she wouldn't discuss, she'd turned to him. Tension he hadn't noticed eased from his shoulders at the thought. The soapy scent mixed with steam, with the water's liquid massage, to pull him more fully into his senses. He closed his eyes and closed out thoughts, floating along the skin of the moment. He shook his head. There had been a time when a single night of sentry sleep wouldn't have left him this drowsy. He was older now, out of practice. Out of training, Benedict would say. Rule grinned as he worked up a lather, thinking of the older brother who'd trained him, along with so many other youngsters. Benedict wasn't easy on those he trained, but he never asked more of his cubs than they could give, and he had a knack for understanding each youngster's limits. Unlike some of the physically gifted, he didn't expect others to live up to his own standards. Of course, that would have been unrealistic. Two-footed or four, Benedict was in a class of his own. Those summers were years in the past, but Benedict's training stuck. His methods wouldn't suit human notions, but they weren't designed for humans, were they? Being woken out of a deep sleep by having a chunk ripped out of your shoulder by an enemy's teeth inspired a youngster to stay alert. Grief pinched out his grin. He closed his eyes as memory arrived, sharp-clawed. Nick. For a moment, he simply stood there, absorbing the pain, new and unblunted and tangled with so many other feelings. It had been Rule's other brother, Mick, whose teeth ripped a chunk from his shoulder all those years ago. Mick was, had been, nearly Rule's age mate, a rarity among his people. They met for the first time the summer Rule began formally training with Benedict. Rivalry sprouted between them, Rule thought, tilting his head back as the water washed away the soap. Of course, but it had been friendly, not serious, back then. Hadn't it? Did the lens of the present distort the past or reveal it more clearly?
Let it be.
Mick was dead. He'd died saving Rule's life. A hero's death. If he'd first endangered it, that was the Mad Helen's doing, not Mick's. With the power from that accursed staff, she'd tipped Rule's brother into a sort of madness. But she couldn't have gotten Mick if the seed hadn't been there. The seed of jealousy of a particularly nasty sort. The clans had a word for it. Fratriodi. Brother hate. Lily's cell phone rang.
Oh, damn. Hello? What?
It was just after 6 a.m. The moon had set and the sun hadn't yet made an appearance, so she'd switched on the bedside lamp. She sat on the bed in a pool of that yellowish light scribbling on the pad she kept close, wearing pale yellow panties and a short black t-shirt that left a strip of her back and belly bare. He'd removed those panties when she woke from a nightmare. She must have scrambled into them when the phone rang. She glanced at him and disconnected.
I gotta go.
I know, I missed the first part, though. Who was it?
She shoved her hair out of her face, frowning at him.
I wish you'd quit listening to both sides of my phone conversations.
He shrugged. Even if he could stop his ears from hearing so much, he wouldn't.
You don't work homicide anymore. Why were you called about a murder in Temecula?
Possible homicide.
Maybe her frown hadn't been directed at him. It lingered as she stared into some mental space, totting up facts he lacked.
The call was from the FBI district office. They were contacted by local authorities in Temecula about a suspicious death.
She pushed to her feet.
Why call you?
There's a connection to Harlow, a witness. The body was discovered 2 hours ago.
She headed for the bathroom. This was hardly the first sighting of someone who might be Patrick Harlow. 10 days ago, Reuben Brooks succeeded in getting him put on the FBI's 10 most wanted list, his photo and description sent to law enforcement agencies all over the nation. But the man was relentlessly average. Anglo, 5'10", brown hair and eyes, 160 pounds, no scars, no distinctive features other than an unusually mellow voice. The kind of man, Lily said in disgust, you could meet at a party and forget 2 minutes later. Rule didn't know how many reports of possible sightings had come in. Lily had only mentioned those few that seemed promising. It was the first one connected to a possible homicide, though. She'd want to get to the scene quickly. He needed to get dressed. He glanced at the closed bathroom door. First things first. If he didn't make coffee, she'd probably stop for the convenience store version along the way. Rule returned from the kitchen just as Lily emerged from the bathroom.
Why is it only a possible homicide?
She padded up to the tall chest facing the bed. Her shoulder looked much improved, he thought. Until now, he'd had to help her with things that went over her head.
Cause of death hasn't been determined.
She opened the top drawer and closed it again. He'd seen her do that several times. She'd automatically open that drawer, forgetting she'd emptied it to make room for some of his things. She opened the second drawer and plucked out a scrap of black silk.
This is definitely not mine. Why would anyone wear a thong?
She tossed it to him.
It's gotta feel like a permanent wedgie.
He pulled on his underwear and watched her step into hers, carnation pink this morning. He loved watching her get dressed. It was fun to see her cover what he would uncover later, yes, but there was a quiet intimacy involved that he treasured even more. She always put on her panties first, then her bra. She preferred to shower at night and seldom wore pantyhose. She bought toothpaste in tubes, pickles in bulk, and panties in every color. Her wound interfered with the run on the beach she was used to, but she adhered religiously to her therapy program. When it was time to leave, she'd slip on her shoulder harness before her shoes. Small details, perhaps, but he was learning her.
Why do you wear a bra?
She looked down at her chest and shook her head.
God only knows.
I meant that a thong offers me some support, keeps my dangly bits from bouncing around.
Her glance skimmed his body, eyebrows lifting. No doubt she noticed that there was more looking up than dangling at the moment. He placed his hand beneath one of her pretty breasts, covered now in stretchy white lace, and dragged his thumb across the tip.
I like everything about these, you know, the size, shape, texture, and the taste, especially that.
Her nipple ripened, and her eyes went smoky. That didn't keep her from batting his hand away.
I have to go.
We have to go, you mean?
He went to the closet, which was organized by color, season, and type of garment. She'd managed to find a few inches of hanging space for him, but his selection was limited. He took out a pair of black slacks.
You're not wearing a bandage.
The in-sleep thing seems to have helped. My shoulder isn't back to normal, but it's better.
She joined him at the closet and took out one of the black t-shirts.
No need for you to get out this early.
Try again.
He fastened his slacks.
Even if I were okay with you going without me when we know you're a target.
You're coming awfully close to the allow word.
Yet skirting it deftly, I believe. Temecula is an hour away, if the traffic is kind.
About 60 miles.
The mate bond might stretch that far, but this isn't a good time to test it.
Oh, right.
She tossed her shirt on the bed, following it with a pair of tan slacks and a red jacket.
Why don't you make us some coffee? You'll bitch if you have to drink convenience store stuff.
I already did.
Surely even a human nose could smell it brewing. He looked at her in sudden, sharp suspicion.
Why don't you want me to go with you? What aren't you telling me?
I was hoping to keep you from going all alpha and protective on me, but I guess it's a lost cause.
Good guess. Keep talking.
The witness was out with the deceased last night. He identified Harlow as the one she left the club with.
He knows Harlow?
He made the ID from a photo they showed him.
Then they already had some reason to think Harlow was involved.
Oh, yeah. He wrote a little note on the victim's stomach with a felt-tipped pen and signed it.
What did it say?
This one's for you.
No question, Rule had a better ride than Lily. A Mercedes convertible with buttery soft seats and a top-of-the-line sound system.
Swing by the Holiday Inn on Harbor. The district office was going to call Weaver. We'll be picking her up.
Yeah, okay.
I don't have a problem with her, you know.
That's good to hear.
If I let myself get bent out of shape every time I run across one of your old lovers, I'd spend most of my time pretzeled.
My reputation far exceeds the reality, you know. I haven't been with nearly as many women as the tabloids like to claim.
I don't suppose that would be physically possible. I'm wondering if we should tell her about the mate bond.
What? No.
I know it's supposed to be a big secret, but we're asking her to operate without full information. That doesn't feel right.
If it were up to me, I'd trust Sinna with that knowledge, but not even the Roe can decide to reveal some of the lore about our connection to the lady. The Chosen are part of that lore.
You mean no one can tell ever?
Not exactly. There's too much you don't know. You need to talk with the Rej.
I'm supposed to in a few days, but we need to clear this up ASAP.
I'll have to go to Clanholm. She doesn't leave it, and she doesn't care for telephones.
Sounds like grandmother.
Was Lily expected to worship the lady now that she was Clan? Not likely to happen, but she didn't want to get into that right now.
Tell me something. Weaver said you hadn't changed. People say that sort of thing all the time, but I guess it's pretty much true for you. How long ago did you know her?
10 years. No, more like 12.
So maybe Weaver's more of a problem for you than for me. If she starts thinking about how little you've changed...
It's going to come out.
He accelerated smoothly onto Harbor Drive.
Sooner or later, it will come out. Once enough of us stopped passing for human, it became inevitable that our longevity would be noticed. That's one reason some Lupi objected to going public.
How did you get it settled that you would go public? Not by voting, I'm guessing.
He gave her one of those hard-to-read glances.
No, we didn't vote. The Rose discussed, argued, formed alliances, and sometimes fought, but there was no consensus. Eventually, my father decided to force the issue.
She considered what she knew of Eisen Turner.
He had a hand in the Borden decision?
That, too, but I was referring to Carr versus Texas.
Lily's eyebrows rose. Since its founding, the U.S. government had mostly ignored the Lupi problem, leaving things up to the states to handle however they thought best. Until recently, the states had thought in terms of imprisonment, execution both formal and informal, even castration. Carr versus the state of Texas had changed all that.
The Supreme Court ruling had made Lupi citizens when in human form. Congress promptly declared lycanthropy a public health hazard, ushering in more than a decade of forced registration and treatment. Now that, too, had been declared unconstitutional. Lupi's four-footed status remained murky, but there was a bill pending about that.
Was Carr an Okalai?
You underestimate Eisen. William Carr was a Tory, one of our oldest and most revered clans. They have virtually no power. They're too tiny, but they have great due. Honor, reputation, face, magic, history. Due encompasses all that. Every lupus on the planet owes them and will until the end of days.
That sounded like quite a story, but it would have to wait.
And?
Carr wasn't just a Tory, he was Roe. At that time, virtually any other lupus who did what he did would have been killed by those opposed to mainstreaming. Not the Atori, Ro.
And this was somehow Eisen's doing?
Yes.
The Carr decision took place, what, 12 years ago? More like 15. A few years before you and Weaver were cozy, you would have been 36 or so.
38.
Were you already your father's heir?
What are you getting at?
I'm trying to get things fixed in my mind, that's all.
I was an adult 15 years ago. You weren't. That continues to bother you.
And that pisses you off.
I am not pissed.
He turned sharply into the drive that circled the front of the Holiday Inn.
Right. Do you see Weaver? She's supposed to wait down front for us.
You're always telling me what I am. I'm pissed. I'm promiscuous.
I didn't call you promiscuous.
He stopped abruptly enough for her to lurch against her seatbelt.
There's Cinna.
Great. Good.
Lily stopped herself before she could blurt out something stupid like, I guess she never called you promiscuous. For one thing, it was probably true. For another, it would have sounded entirely too petty and jealous, which she wasn't. Not exactly. But Rule had been promiscuous. Maybe not by his standards, whatever those might be, but by hers. He'd been quite the little honeybee, flitting from flower to flower. And he'd been flitting a lot longer than she realized. About 20 years longer. His honeybee days were over, though. That's what counted. Maybe that's what had him on edge, too. Maybe trading every woman for one woman didn't seem like such a great deal this morning. He hadn't been given a choice, after all. The mate bond locked them both in this relationship. And however right it felt on the deepest level, there were all sorts of levels that could play hell with happy ever after.
Morning!
Cinna Weaver tossed in a scruffy black tote and slid inside. She glanced from one to the other of them, her eyebrows lifted, rearranging the whorls on her forehead.
Whoa. You two arguing, or did someone die?
Lily lifted her own eyebrows.
Kimberly Ann Curtis. Caucasian, brown and brown, 57130. She turned 22 last March, went by Kim.
Okay, don't tell me. None of my business, I guess.
Cinna settled back against the seat.
I'll admit, the someone died comment was stupid when we're headed to a murder scene.
A possible homicide.
Whatever. God, it's god-awful early. Don't expect clever from me for another couple hours.
I can wait.
Rule pulled away.
Fasten your seatbelt, please.
Of course, seatbelt enforcer.
Cinna complied, so Lily ignored the comment. Chances were Weaver had never responded to vehicular crashes. She wouldn't know what a face looked like after impacting with a windshield. Or traveling through one.
So what do we know about this possible homicide?
She was found about 3:30 this morning by Mike Sanderson, a co-worker who says they dated sometimes, but were not exclusive. Nonetheless, he was sufficiently bothered by it when she left the Cactus Corral last night with someone else that he went to her dwelling around 3. He found her dead and called the police. No obvious signs of violence, no cause of death determined.
Huh.
Weaver unzipped her tote.
This Sanderson, the one who ID'd Harlow? It was him she left with, right?
Right.
Lily frowned at the tote.
I thought you didn't need any ingredients, that your spells were in your tattoos.
You thought right.
She took out a thermos.
Hot chocolate. Want some?
No thanks, I've got coffee.
Don't know how anyone drinks that stuff. I'm wondering why Rule's driving. No offense, Rule, you're great eye candy, but you're a civilian. What are you along for?
Emergency sex.
You? You're getting some bennies I didn't think the Bureau offered. I'm jealous.
Lily felt her cheeks heat and thanked God for thick skin. Blushing didn't show.
He's a civilian consultant.
Never heard it called that before. I thought maybe he was bodyguarding you, what with Harlow leaving you love notes now.
That too. You know about the note?
Yeah, I heard. You... If there's a way to say your last name so that it doesn't sound like a pronoun, it is beyond me.
There were three ways to say her last name in Chinese, two of which were beyond Lily, much to Grandmother's disgust.
I'm used to people having trouble with my surname.
Let's use first names, then.
She delved into her tote again, this time coming up with a foam takeout container.
Okay.
Though it wasn't, not really. But that just made Lily determined to get over it.
You should know that we acquired some new information last night.
After you left the ER?
Yes. Seaborn paid me a visit.
I have got to meet that dude. A sorcerer.
She shook her head and opened the container, which turned out to hold a bagel.
Hard to believe, but reality's often a stretch. Some people find me hard to believe.
He thinks you'll have trouble finding Harlow, that the staff is shielding him.
Well, won't know until I try, but I'm pretty good.
Lily tried not to stare longingly at Cinna's bagel. She could have brought some food along, if she ever went to the store and bought stuff.
He also says he scried for Harlow and found him in... hell.
No shit.
I don't think Seaborn was making it up, but he doesn't know if Harlow is there now, was there recently, or will be there soon.
Fire scrying, huh? Well, that is interesting.
She licked a crumb off her thumb.
Ties right in with the demon who conked you on the head.
So it seems. I have a question for you.
Eh, shoot.
In order to find something, you have to establish a connection with it, right?
That's how it works.
I want you to hunt for Harlow then, not the staff. I've got some concerns about you connecting with it. It's... tainted.
Lily was getting better at reading the expression beneath the tattoos. Cinna obviously didn't think much of Lily's caution.
Have you ever encountered death magic?
No. Nasty stuff.
The staff reeks of it.
Yeah? What does it smell like?
Putrefaction.
Cinna made a face at her bagel.
You're killing my appetite.
You've grown more delicate. I can remember a time when it would take actual decay, not the mere mention of it, to have an effect.
I've always had healthy appetites. Remember that night on the roof?
Weaver.
Yeah?
Are you trying to annoy me? Or is annoyance the usual byproduct of your personality?
Usual byproduct, I guess. You two really do have an exclusive thing going.
We really do.
Cinna looked at what was left of her bagel. For a moment, there was no expression at all on that odd, striking face.
So what's this Seaborn like?
He's annoying, too. Also incredibly gorgeous.
Oh, I really do need to meet him.
She popped the last bite into her mouth.
You don't have to worry about me getting tainted if I do sort something connected to the staff. I've got all sorts of protection written in. When I sort, I take the patterns I want to find on my skin. The energy doesn't go any deeper.
That sounded a little like what Lily experienced when she touched magic. She felt its texture, but the magic itself slid off her as if she were greased. Still, unlike her, Cinna didn't remain entirely unaffected.
Your skin's part of you. I don't want you trying to find the staff.
Harlow's a better target anyway.
Was she agreeing or evading? Lily gave one last warning.
Karansky has good protection too. Helen went right through it. She couldn't get past Seaborn's shields to his mind, but she was still able to use the staff against him. It caused excruciating pain.
You're going somewhere with this.
She was also able to kill with it. She tried to use it on me that way. It had no effect.
Because you're sensitive, I get it.
I hope you also get that standard arrest procedures won't work with Harlow. I'm the only one the staff can't affect, so when we do find him, I go in alone.
You may be immune to the staff, but there are plenty of other ways to get killed.
She'll have backup.
30 feet away and out of sight.
That's too far. Cullen said Helen had to be within 15 feet to affect him.
Cullen's a sorcerer. What's safe for him may not be safe for others. Not that I'm convinced he knows the meaning of safety.
Lily thought of what he'd said about experimenting with mage fire.
Why are you so bloody careful about everyone's safety but yours?
It's my safety at stake, too. I need to know that the people backing me up aren't being controlled by...
We've been over this. Harlow can't read minds, so he can't take over minds.
We don't know what all he can do. If you weren't so stubbornly sure...
Time out! If the two of you can't play nice, you'll have to go to your rooms.
Without our supper?
Only if you don't tell me what you're arguing about.
Right.
At least this time she knew what the argument was about.
The problem is that we've got more guesses than facts about what the staff can do.
From what you've said, it can kill, hurt like hell, or take over your mind.
The first two, yes. Mind control, probably not, if it's in Harlow's hands. Lily and I disagree about that. I believe the staff augments the user's natural gift, if there is one. Helen was a telepath. Harlow isn't.
I'm not disputing that. But Helen didn't have a gift that let her slice people up from a distance. That came purely from the staff. What else can it do that we don't know about?
Maybe it has no limits, and the President and most of Congress are already under Harlow's control. Lily, we can't guard against every maybe you can conjure up.
We'll take what precautions seem reasonable. 30 feet is reasonable.
To you.
I'm in charge.
We don't get to vote? And here I thought you were so enamored of democracy.
Lily yanked out a CD at random and jammed it into the player. Then she immediately turned down the volume. Watching the performance in the front seat, Cinna found herself surprised. She hadn't expected to like Lily Yu. That was envy, of course, with a healthy dose of its kissing cousin, jealousy. But what could be more natural? She didn't fault herself for it. But somewhere along the line, a little worm of liking surprised her by wiggling past all the other stuff. Aside from that, though, she wasn't sure what to make of the woman. Lily seemed to know her business, but why had she brought Rule along? No doubt he could guard the hell out of her, but she wasn't exactly a fragile flower. Cinna couldn't see what he could contribute otherwise. The Lupi weren't connected to the hunt for Harlow, unless there was something she hadn't been told. It wouldn't be the first time she'd been left out of the loop. All too often, people thought of her as a handy sort of freak, like the spinner in a board game. Toss her down, spin her around, see which way she pointed. The way they saw it, she didn't need a brain to find stuff, so they assumed she didn't have one. Rule knew better. But he was just naturally secretive as hell. Still, she didn't think he'd out and out lie to her. She'd watch for a chance to catch him alone, she decided, and ask him why he was really along. Temecula lay about halfway between San Diego and LA on I-15. By the time they reached its fast food and gas station fringes, the sun had popped up over the horizon, and Lily switched off the long hair music and turned to Cinna.
Look, there's something I should warn you about before we get there. Temecula used to be a small, sleepy town, but it put on a real growth spurt in the past 10 years. It's jealous of its dignity. Keep in mind that there's some rivalry between the newcomers and the old-timers in the local police. The ones who have been around forever are outnumbered, but they have seniority and rank. They don't need outsiders telling them how to do things.
Kim had been doing okay for herself, Cinna thought as they pulled up near their goal. Up until someone killed her, that is. She'd lived in half of a little stucco duplex roofed with those red tiles Californians were crazy about. The yard was tiny, but green. She counted 4 cops tramping around it. In short order, Lily found out the body was gone and they'd have to wait for the local police to finish their work. She looked furious. For Cinna, it felt good to be out of the car. Not that she got carsick anymore. She had a dandy little anti-nausea spell. But she hated riding in the back seat. She always felt cramped and left out. The air had that slick, cool feel of spring. She'd come here straight from another job in Kansas City, with no time to pick up more clothes. She wasn't dressed right for the climate. Actually, she just plain wasn't dressed right, but that was nothing new. She'd never gotten the hang of dressing like a Phoebe. Cinna looked at the China doll. Cinna was wearing tan slacks, too, but they didn't look like Lily's, and her jacket was not nearly as fashionable as the other woman's trim little red thing. Lily didn't carry an old black gym bag around, either. No, she had a big, flat leather envelope of a purse slung over her shoulder. Lily and Rule were talking nearby, too low for Cinna to make out the words. They weren't arguing, but they weren't happy, either. That cheered Cinna up some. Call her petty, but she liked knowing the woman wasn't perfect. Finally, someone came out of the victim's front door. He was Asian and not in uniform, so Cinna allowed herself to jump to the conclusion that he was the guy they were waiting for. Detective Leung was a small man, not much taller than Lily, and dressed just as pretty. Pressed white shirt, navy suit, and narrow tie. He didn't have much in the way of lines to give away his age, but his hair was more salt than pepper. By the time he reached them, It was obvious he didn't plan to roll out the welcome mat.
Detective Leung, Temecula PD.
He got a good look at Rule.
What is he doing here? And her?
Cinna gave him an eat-shit-and-die smile.
He's consulting, she's MCD, same as me. If it's any of your business. Who ordered the body removed?
I did. The techs were finished with it.
I asked that the body not be moved.
We don't always get what we want, do we? Guess I didn't get the message.
His smile was tight, like his underwear, Cinna suspected. Just as she suspected he'd gotten the message and ignored it.
I'd like to see your shield, Detective.
His eyes narrowed, but he took it out, flashed it, and then started to put it back in his inside jacket pocket. Lily just stood there with her hand out. He paused, trying to look like he wasn't pissed. Finally, she handed it over. She dug into one of the pockets in that oversized envelope and pulled out a snazzy little leather folder with a notepad inside. There, she jotted down his shield number before giving it back to him.
We'll look at the scene first. Where will I find the body?
The hospital morgue. We aren't a big city with a separate crime morgue, but,
And here, he started to feel a bit better.
I'm afraid I can't let you onto the scene.
I'm at a loss to understand why you think you have a choice.
Oh, I'll cooperate. If your district office wants to send someone else, I'd be glad to cooperate. But I can't very well let you onto the scene.
He was enjoying himself now.
Not when you're implicated.
For a long moment, Lily didn't say a word. Cinna glanced at Rule, expecting him to say or do something. But he was just watching, wearing this little smile as if he expected to enjoy what came next.
I'm sure it can be cleared up, but that note links you to the crime. I can't take any chance of the scene being contaminated. If you object, you can always go downtown and talk to the chief.
You misunderstand. Title 28, United States Code, Section 533, authorizes the Attorney General to appoint officials to investigate crimes against the United States.
What the hell does that...
Title 18, Chapter 51, Section 1111, makes it a federal crime to use magical means to commit murder. Chapter 19 makes it a federal crime to conspire to commit an act of violence, including violence by magical means. I am the duly constituted official investigating a conspiracy to attempt the murder of multiple persons, including law enforcement personnel, by magical means. My authority comes from the Attorney General and supersedes that of your chief of police. My chief suspect was seen with your victim. He left me a goddamned signed note about it on the body. Title 18, Chapter 55...
I'm not disputing jurisdiction. I'm saying that you...
And I'm saying that you lack the authority to bar me from this scene. If you have concerns about my fitness or possible culpability in this crime, you may relate them to my superiors. Don't bother the district office. They lack the authority to interfere, too. You'd better go right to the head of MCD, Reuben Brooks. He's at FBI headquarters in Washington. Call him.
She produced a cell phone from another of her bag's pockets and tossed it to him. It spoke well for Leong's reflexes that he caught it in spite of his deer-in-the-headlights look.
The number for his direct line is on speed dial. Hit 7.
Wait a minute. I don't want...
If you're not prepared to challenge my fitness, then I request and require your cooperation.
She started for the duplex. The two closest uniformed cops were trying to look like they weren't enjoying the exchange. Maybe Leong wasn't popular with the rank and file. Rule had caught his cue immediately and kept pace with her. Cinna dropped in behind.
What was the victim wearing?
Leung hurried to catch up.
Nothing.
Leung grabbed Lily's arm just as she reached the porch.
I'm not letting that wear in. He's no federal agent.
He hadn't, Cinna noticed. Tried grabbing Rule. Good call.
You had better let go of me right now. Unless you are planning to make an arrest.
He dropped his hand, looking like he wanted to hit her with it. She looked back at him, her gaze steady as the beat of a sniper. Finally, he looked away. She stepped onto the porch.
Turner won't be going inside right away, but that's my call, not yours.
She opened her purse and pulled out a wad of plastic, which she separated into gloves and booties. Cinna glanced at Leung's feet. He hadn't bothered with the booties. Now that she thought of it, he hadn't been wearing gloves when he came out of the house either.
Where was the body found?
Lily bent over to pull the plastic over one shoe.
Bedroom at the back. In bed, arranged neatly. Her hands were folded over her heart.
Cinna figured he was telling himself he'd won one battle, with the exclusion of Rule from the scene.
Any signs of sexual assault?
No resistance wounds, no visible tearing, and I didn't see any traces of semen.
The guy who found her, he's a friend or a boyfriend?
He claims they weren't steady, just dated now and then. But it bugged him enough when she went home with someone else that he came by later. Says he wanted to be sure she was okay.
Did he have a key or was the door unlocked?
Open, he says. Ajar, not wide open.
It was open now, too. Cinna could see an ordinary living room through the doorway. Beige sofa and carpet, a television. No evidence techs in sight. Now that she thought of it, she didn't hear their little vacuums either. Surely they hadn't done the whole place already. Lily gave Rule a nod. He must have known what that meant because he stepped up to the door, crouched down, and put his face next to the knob.
What the hell?
She waved him to silence. Rule got a good sniff, then faced into the beige living room. He did this thing with his head like a dog scenting the air. Then he looked at Lily over his shoulder. Cinna got his profile. Gorgeous, but grim.
I don't get anything distinctive from the door, but in there...
He jerked his head toward the living room.
Death magic.
Lily turned to Leong.
This is my investigation now, and this place is sealed. No one goes in without my say-so.
You can't!
I just did.
Lily got her phone back from Leong. While he put in a call to his chief to complain about her, she punched 7 and prayed she hadn't just seriously exceeded her authority. She glanced at her watch as the phone rang on the other end. 7:30 here meant 11:30 in D.C., so unless he was in a meeting...
Hello, Lily.
Unless he was in a meeting, he answered this phone himself. Only members of the unit had the number.
I've got a murder by magical means. Harlow's involved.
Go on.
She filled him in, including her announcement about sealing the place.
So am I in trouble for exceeding my authority? And if not, can I get someone here to confirm manner of death in a way the courts will accept? Koronsky would be best, but if not him, another Wiccan. Anna could use some evidence techs. Leung screwed up the scene. No telling how many big, dirty cop feet have already trampled through, but we still need to try. And who handles the door-to-door?
There followed one painful second of silence.
Well, you seem to be dealing well with the loss of Koronsky, whom you can't have back yet, I'm afraid, so we'll have to call in civilian experts. There's a coven in Los Angeles whose testimony has held up well. I'll send them down. Call the district office. No, I'll do it. They'll take over working the scene, but you'll need to solicit the cooperation of local authorities for the door-to-door.
Yes, sir. Leung's an idiot, however.
They would need a whole coven to do what Koronsky normally did on his own? She had questions about that, but filed them mentally for now.
He's the type who'd screw up the investigation just to make me look bad. I'm afraid we got off on the wrong foot.
So I gathered. Cope. You'll take Weaver in to check out the scene?
Yes, sir. She's getting her feet covered now.
Good. I have this feeling... Well, keep her involved, just in case. Oh, about the staff. I've been asked to instruct you to preserve it for study, if at all possible.
Lily opened her mouth to protest, and closed it again. He hadn't actually told her not to destroy the staff, had he? Just that he'd been asked to tell her that.
Yes, sir.
Call me this evening to update, unless events dictate otherwise. Good luck.
Thank you.
Cinna had been listening in with an interested expression on her face. Rule stood a little ways away, closer to Leung, probably eavesdropping on that conversation instead of hers. Good. She knew what he'd think about any directive to preserve the staff instead of destroying it. She tended to agree with him, but needed to think it over.
Come on, Cinna. Let's see what we can learn.
The living room was small, beige, and spotless. She stopped in the middle of it, looking around. Kim Curtis had been a tidy person. The carpet was recently vacuumed, the room itself as tidy as Lily's apartment, if not as sparsely furnished. The matching armchairs looked new. The couch was slip-covered in ivory matelassé, with 2 pale green pillows that precisely matched the chairs. A couple of prints hung on the walls, nice frames, conventional landscapes. The entertainment unit held a large television, an old VCR, a new CD-DVD player, and 5 cloth-covered boxes. No glasses or plates in sight. If Curtis had offered Harlow a drink, they hadn't had it in here. Lily went to the entertainment unit and opened one of the boxes.
What are you looking for?
I don't know.
The boxes all held CDs and movies, tapes and DVDs.
She liked old musicals and chick flicks.
She was doing okay for herself, wasn't she? She was just 22, but she had her own place, decent stuff.
Yes, maybe some of this wasn't paid for yet, but she was doing okay. Until she ran into Harlow. Let's check out the bedroom.
It was a real treat watching you take that little pissant apart. Quite a lesson for me in respecting local authority.
Is it too late for do as I say, not as I do?
Did you make up all that legal stuff you quoted at him?
Lily stepped into the back bedroom and looked around.
I may have gotten some of the section numbers wrong. The gist was accurate.
That's just scary. You really know all that code?
Bits and pieces. I've been trying to get up to speed.
Kim hadn't done much decorating in here. White walls, hand-me-down furniture that didn't match. But it wasn't an interesting mismatch either.
I don't know if Karansky told you, but I haven't been with the unit long. I used to work homicide.
The unmade bed drooled white sheets and a faded pink and yellow comforter onto the floor. No blood, but the body had voided itself in death, so it didn't smell great in here.
Ugh, God, I'm glad I am not Rule.
He doesn't react to smells the way we do.
No pictures on the walls, but above the bed were three wooden crosses. Handmade, she thought. Pretty things, really.
Most of the time, scent is information to him. Like if we see a pile of dog shit on the ground, no big deal. We get the message to step around it. Smells are mostly like that for him.
Oof, if you say so.
There was a Bible on the bedside table. Lily frowned at it, trying to fit the signs of religious devotion with someone who picked up a stranger in a bar. Some religious types strayed from the straight and narrow on a regular basis, yet that didn't seem to fit this time. Why? Because the devotional items were in here, she realized, in Kim's personal space, not out in her living area. Her faith hadn't been for show, yet she'd picked up a stranger in a bar. She turned to Cinna.
From what you've told me, you can't look for traces of Harlow yet because you don't have his pattern, but you can look for bits that don't match with the victims.
I'll need to sort some of her things first, pick up her pattern, and then...
She glanced at the bed.
And then I'll see what I can pick out of this that isn't hers.
Have at it. I'll check things my own way.
Lily had only touched death magic once. It hadn't been pleasant. She tugged off one plastic glove, steeling herself. Cinna was removing her gloves, too.
I was thinking that we might be able to estimate the strength of the staff.
How's that?
What's your IMP?
My what?
IMP. You know, innate magic potential.
Lily looked at her blankly.
You have been tested, haven't you?
Oh, right.
She remembered Karansky saying something about it.
The test wouldn't work on me because it uses a spell to gauge the strength of the subject's gift. The spell would slide right off.
Shit, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Maybe there's some other way to estimate the strength of your gift. It was strong enough to keep the staff from affecting you, so...
It doesn't work that way. I don't...
Lily's voice drifted off as she placed her palm on the pillow, right where an impression remained from Kim Curtis's head.
Hey, you okay?
I'm fine. I just hate the feel of this stuff.
Death magic, huh? What does it feel like?
Ground glass and rotting flesh.
Only worse. She didn't have words to describe the corruption of it. She'd hoped she could tell if there was some difference, some change in the magic with someone else using the staff, but the sheer foulness overwhelmed everything else. Lily shook her hand to rid herself of the lingering sensation and pulled her glove back on.
As I was saying, being a sensitive isn't like other gifts. I never used to think of it as a gift at all, actually.
Why not?
You've got some kind of shields, right?
Sure.
Cinna looked around.
I'm gonna need to touch something of Kim's.
We'll tag whatever you handle. Try not to leave fingerprints on anything else.
Lily moved to the dresser, which held a mirror, jewelry box, and several bottles of perfume on a little tray.
Anyone with a gift can learn to do spells, right?
Pretty much.
Cinna elbowed open the closet door.
Some are better at spellcraft than others. Most of us are only really good at a few types of spells, the ones that relate most closely to our gift.
She sat on the floor and pulled out an athletic shoe, running her bare hand over it.
Yeah, this'll work.
Apparently, shoes absorbed more than sweat from their wearers. Lily opened the jewelry box. Kim Curtis had liked earrings and bracelets. No necklaces, though.
So shields would be stronger or weaker depending on how strong your gift is and how good you are at that type of spell.
Basically. There are ways to store power, but it helps to have a strong gift.
Well, I can't use magic.
Lily closed the jewelry box.
And I don't have shields. Being a sensitive is more like not being porous. Some substances won't soak up water no matter how much you pour over them. Magic can't soak into me no matter how much I'm hit with. Except...
No, don't stop now. If there's an exception, I need to know about it.
Last night, Nettie was able to put me in sleep. I'm told she used some sort of religious energy, not magic. But it was still a spell. I don't see why it worked on me.
Can't help you much. I don't know what the difference is either.
She put down the shoe and rose.
I've got Kim's pattern. I don't know if I'll be able to pick up enough of Harlow's to do any good, but I'll give it a shot.
You can limit your scan to Harlow, right? So you won't get anything from the staff.
I don't scan, I sort.
I'm not following you.
There are two different operations. Scanning would be, like looking for a red scarf you dropped on the floor. You'd see it from a distance. You wouldn't have to touch it or pick it up. Sorting is more like looking for a silk scarf in a tangled pile of scarves. You'd have to touch the scarves to find the one you wanted and work it loose from the others.
Then be careful what you pick up.
She flashed Lily a grin and moved up to the bed. Gradually, all expression bled out of her face, leaving only focus. She held her left hand at her waist, palm out as if deflecting something, and extended her right arm, elbow locked and fingers together, pointing down at the bed. Slowly, her arm swung to the left. Nothing else moved. She might have been a statue with a single moving part, the slowly swinging arm moving now to the right. If she still breathed, it didn't show. The arm hesitated and stopped. Gradually, her fingers spread out. Her eyes rolled back in her head. As if every muscle in her body had simultaneously melted, she collapsed.
Whoa.
Lily leaped for her. She got there just before the woman's head smacked into the bed frame, but not with any grace. Off balance, Lily ended up going down with Cinna, sprawled half on top of her. She managed to sit up, shifting so Cinna's head rested on her thigh. She was checking her pulse when those whiskey-colored eyes blinked open.
Oh, shit.
Are you okay? What happened?
Oh, it turns out the sorcerer was right. That staff does not want to be found.
For a second, Lily just stared at her.
You tried to find it. After everything I said, in defiance of a direct order, you tried to find the damn staff.
I figured you didn't know what you were talking about.
Lily stood.
Ow, hey!
Cinna's head hit the floor.
Karansky was right when he called you a loose cannon. How am I supposed to work with you when I can't trust you? I want to punch something. Did you bother looking for Harlow's pattern at all?
Of course. What I found, I assume it's from Harlow, was all tied up with the ugly stuff. Couldn't sort it out.
That's no excuse.
I wasn't excusing myself. Just letting you know. I feel like I'm coming off of a 3-day drunk. I was wrong about one thing, so maybe you should, check to see if something was done to me. It shouldn't be possible, not at a distance, but the impossible keeps happening lately.
Lily was mad enough to let her stew a while. It was only after a severe struggle with her less professional side that she could answer.
I touched your skin when I checked your pulse. No trace of death magic, so I'd say the staff didn't do anything but knock you down.
I guess you couldn't have missed it if there was just a teensy trace.
If death magic had a smell, it would be like that stuff they put in natural gas to make it smell bad. Even the tiniest whiff and you know it's there. If I touch death magic, I know it.
Good. There is one more thing I need to tell you. It's about Kim Curtis.
Yes?
She isn't entirely gone.
Rule felt sick.
You sure the residue you picked up isn't a ghost?
They were waiting for the FBI's crime scene specialists to arrive. He and Cinna stood in one corner of the yard. Lily was on the porch talking to the uniformed officer who'd been first on the scene. The rest of the police were gone. Leung had dismissed them in a temper fit when his chief told him to let the FBI have the scene. At least the press hadn't arrived. Yet.
I don't know what I picked up, but with ghosts there's always a direction, you know? This time there wasn't.
What made you try to find a dead woman?
I always check. When I'm called in, a lot of times someone has died violently. That's a good way to throw up a ghost, so I do a find on the victim to make sure. If there is one, we call in a specialist.
You've found ghosts, then?
Sure, they're not that unusual. Most times they aren't strong enough to manifest, so no one knows they're around.
And when there isn't a ghost, you get... what?
Nothing. When people die, there shouldn't be anything for me to find. And this time, there was. Well, not all of her, but something of her. That's what a ghost feels like. Only this remnant wasn't tied to a place like a ghost would be. I don't know what it means.
It means that he didn't just kill her. He took her life and fed it to the staff.
Cinna shook her head stubbornly.
No, I couldn't get a fix on the staff. How could I pick up on something inside it?
You connected with it, though. It knocked you on your ass. So where is it?
I couldn't tell, damn it. Something...
She stopped.
Something's blocking me.
The staff, yes.
Cinna looked ill. Rule didn't feel too great himself. Was the remnant of Kim Curtis aware? Trapped? Bodiless? He turned to Lily.
Did you learn anything useful?
Maybe.
He saw strain around her eyes, a tightness he instinctively wanted to ease.
I heard a lot more about Mike Sanderson, the one who found her. I'm trying to get a handle on why she brought Harlow home with her.
You want to know if she was compelled?
I know you don't think the staff can do that, but this isn't adding up. She had these crosses on her bedroom wall and a Bible by her bed, and the boyfriend thinks she was a virgin.
Rule's eyebrows went up.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it? Of course, just because a guy thinks a woman's pure as the driven snow doesn't make it so, but according to Sanderson, she believed in chastity until marriage. That put him off. He isn't religious himself, but he was hooked. He kept hanging around. That's what he was doing last night. He knew she loved to dance, so he went to the Cactus Corral to see if she was there, and sure enough. He's messed up now because he didn't try to stop her when she left with Harlow.
He blames himself. That's natural.
He knew something was wrong. She danced with Harlow one time, and then she left with him.
Maybe Sanderson didn't know her as well as he thought. Or maybe Harlow gave her some roofies or Kay.
Maybe. We'll see if anyone noticed her acting sleepy or drunk. But I don't think Harlow slipped the reluctant boyfriend a date rape drug.
What do you mean?
When Sanderson saw her leaving with a man she didn't know, he went up to them. He asked her what was going on. And Harlow just smiled at him and told him she'd be fine with him. And Sanderson completely bought it. That's what's eating him now. He thought it was just fine if she left with a stranger. This isn't the same as what Helen did to Abel. Harlow didn't erase Sanderson's memories. It's more like what she did to your brother. Changed the way he thought about something.
Yes, she did do that.
The effect seems to have worn off on Sanderson pretty quickly. A couple hours later, he was here, checking up on Kim. He didn't buy the she'll be fine bit for long.
You're drawing a lot of conclusions from very little evidence. Telepathy isn't the only explanation. For one thing, there are other gifts.
Such as?
Well, charisma. It's not as rare as telepathy, and if you put a good persuasion spell with a really strong gift...
Oh, shit, shit, shit!
Lily smacked her hand against her thigh.
I forgot! Karonsky said something like that, that maybe Harlow had a minor gift of charisma.
It's not in his report.
It came up when we were talking. He was speculating, I think. I can't place the conversation, though. Can't get it in context.
That triggered Rule's memory.
After he and Croft had been tampered with, when we met them in their hotel room, he was describing their meeting. He said Harlow might have a touch of a charisma gift.
It would explain a lot. Like why a devout young woman picked him up.
And why a man half in love with her didn't object.
Whoa!
Cinna held up a hand.
I know I mentioned charisma as a possibility, but it would take one hell of a strong gift plus an outstanding persuasion spell to alter people's normal behavior and morals that much. A touch of a gift wouldn't cut it.
The staff. It changes the possibilities.
Did Sanderson say anything about Harlow toting 5 feet of black wood? Did any of the witnesses? Doesn't seem like the sort of thing they'd let him bring into the club.
He could have charmed them into allowing it.
Or maybe he has a don't see me on it.
A what?
A spell that makes people not notice something.
Cinna thought about it and shook her head again.
Demons can do that, go unseen, but that's innate, like rules change. Spells that duplicate the innate abilities of those of the blood just don't exist. Too complex by far. It's like the difference between manipulating DNA and creating it.
And yet Cullen cast a don't see me on my apartment last night.
Well, I'm impressed. if it worked. But your apartment's stationary. A moving object would be a whole nother story. Don't see me on a 5-foot length of wood carried around a crowded bar. Nah, I don't buy it.
Rule and Lily exchanged glances.
I'll call him.
She took out her phone.
He said he'd answer if... Damn.
A white American-made sedan pulled up, with a white American-made van right behind it. The two vehicles parked, bracketing Rule's car. The men in the car wore gray suits. Either the FBI or the IRS had arrived, and Rule didn't think the deceased was being audited.
Weaver,
make it Cinna, okay?
Right, I forgot. Try to get a hold of Karansky. Find out if he remembers why he thought Harlow might have a charisma gift. I need to brief our associates, see what kind of equipment they brought. Rule?
I'll call Colin.
Thanks. Use mine. He'll be more likely to pick up since he wants something from me.
She handed him her phone and headed for the newcomers. Rule watched Lily as he punched in Cullen's number. She'd told him once that a person her size either learned to move fast or got left behind. Not a bad metaphor for how she approached life in general, he thought. Her walk was brisk, efficient, utterly unselfconscious, and utterly female. Then there was the way her hair swayed with her movement. He loved her hair. It was as black as a secret wish, shining in the clear light of the young sun, newly risen from its bed beyond the horizon.
You are really gone on her, aren't you?
Rule glanced at her sharply.
Yes, I am.
For once, Cinna's natural extravagance was dimmed enough to make a mask of the web of patterns over her face.
I see. Well, I need to get my phone. It's in your car in my tote.
Here.
He gave her the keys, frowning as she walked away.
Changed your mind already, love?
No, I'm still of the same mind I was last night.
Oh, it's you. If you're calling to pester me about the tracking spell...
I'm not, but I wouldn't mind knowing how it's working.
There was a moment's silence.
Not. Not properly, at least. I told you, it was basically an Earth spell, didn't I? Well, you wouldn't believe how many blasted churches source in part from Earth, which would amaze their parishioners, I'm sure. The Earth energy gets all tangled up with spiritual energies, which creates a bloody blast of interference every time you come within a few hundred feet. I knew that would happen, so I tried tying it to air, too, but air is chancy, and with all the pollution...
I get the idea.
Three people had gotten out of the van. Lily broke away to talk to them. Cinna was talking on her phone.
You lost us.
Twice. Picked you up again, but you were off the map for nearly a mile at one point.
That's not good.
Rule looked at his car, blocked now by two federal vehicles. He'd tucked the charm Cullen gave him last night under the driver's seat, where Lily was unlikely to see or touch it. She was so bloody stubborn. Observant, too, unfortunately. Cullen's charm was supposed to allow her bodyguards to trail her, undetected. An excellent idea, if it could be made to work. Rule slid his hand in the left pocket of his slacks and fingered the small gold button. It looked ordinary enough, though it was, in fact, truly gold. 20 carats, very soft and pure.
Perhaps we should test the panic button you gave me, if that doesn't work.
If you're not trying to insult me, then roll your tongue back up into your mouth so you don't keep stumbling over it. That thing is simple. Witches make them all the time. Now, if you didn't call to pester me about the tracking spell, what the hell do you want?
The answer to a question.
Lily and the crime scene tech started for the house. Cinna had put away her phone and was following.